How would you like to attend a conference and hear Larry Rast, Carl Fakencher, Brian Wolfmiller, Adrian Dorheinz, Will Wheaton, Chris Roseborough, and Jonathan Fisk? You're invited to the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 10th and 11th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 10th and 11th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no? As a principle,
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment
for the woman.
Yeah, there has to be some form.
Ten years.
I don't know.
You take positions and everything else.
I do take positions and everything else. It's a very complicated position.
But you say bluntly, you're pro-life, meaning you want to ban it.
But the Catholic Church is pro-life.
No, that's not talking about my religion.
But no, I am talking about your religion. Your religion. I mean, you say you're a very good Catholic.
I didn't say very good. I said I'm a Catholic. And secondly, I'm asking, you're running for president. I'm not. I'm asking you, what should a woman face if she chooses to have an abortion?
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to play that game.
You said you're pro-life.
I am pro-life.
That means banning abortion.
And so is the Catholic Church pro-life.
But they don't control the country. This isn't Spain. The church doesn't control the government.
What is the punishment under the Catholic Church? What is the punishment?
Let me give you something for the New Testament. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's. Don't ask me about my religion.
No, I'm asking you.
You want to be president of the United States. Tell me what the law should be. Tell me what the law should be. You said you're pro-life.
I am pro-life.
What's that
with
mean?
With exceptions. I am pro-life. I have not determined what the punishment would
be. Why not?
Because I haven't determined
When you decide to be pro-life, you should have thought of it.
All right, that's pure theater. That is GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump and MSNBC's Chris Matthews in a town hall forum last night. Well, it's a fair question. It is a fair question. The answers, I guess, such as they were, should give pro-lifers pause. They probably give people who are in favor of abortion pause. Two, we're going to be talking about that and getting a little update on the November elections on this Thursday afternoon, March the 31st. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Joining us to do so, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks again for having me.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, welcome back.
It's great to be here with you.
Mark, just real quickly before we get started here, unlike your dear and lovely wife, you would not drop us to be on Bill O'Reilly like she did yesterday.
Why would I pass up an opportunity to be on the number one podcast in the country?
Molly, we got to talk about Donald Trump and Chris Matthews. First of all, was it a fair question to ask of this GOP presidential nominee who claims to be pro-life?
Well, when I hear people talk about whether a question is fair, I like to think of the larger media environment. And certainly all questions about abortion are fair, which is why I wonder why only pro-life candidates are asked any questions at all, much less tough questions about abortion. You never hear Chris Matthews asking pro-choice politicians why they really think it should be legal to kill a child up until the moment of birth, as some of them do, or why it should be legal to kill a child for the crime of being female, or why it should be legal to kill a child just because the child has Down syndrome or would inconvenience the parents. You never hear tough questions like that. So is it fair? Yeah, I mean, any question about abortion is fair. But it's not fair that the media don't have any imagination about tough questions when it comes to pro-choice politicians, while they never ceased to get really belligerent with pro-life candidates.
Is it because, Molly, they don't get the pro-life movement? They don't even really want to get the pro-life movement.
Actually, it might be worse in the case of the media on this topic. They're pretty bad at hiding the fact that they are quite in favor of abortion, and so they have a hard time letting those biases be hidden when they ask their questions. But they don't understand the pro-life movement, and they don't understand, I mean, I bet hardly any journalist at all understand what the actual pro-life position is on whether women should be punished for having abortions if abortion were ever to be made illegal.
You also observe on this subject real quickly what you call pure sabotage of the debate. What do you mean by that? Why did you observe that?
Well, the thing about Donald Trump is he says that in his late 60s he had a conversion on the question of whether abortion is a good thing or bad. And he used to be quite vehemently pro-choice, even supportive of late-term partial birth abortion, and now he says he's pro-life. but he doesn't know anything about the pro-life movement. I mean, you could say that about a lot of issues. He's not. He's usually very good at understanding the top line, the big picture of a given situation. He's not so good at understanding policy details. In the case of abortion, he didn't do a good job with the top line issue either. And when he talked about this, I mean, punishment of women, there's, you know, first of all, there's a big history of this in which there have been, in which you actually have case law where women are not punished for abortion. Case law is usually, or the law is usually targeted to the abortionist. And that is something going way back. I mean, Susan B. Anthony has spoken about this, Pro-lifers are very consistent. But he also talked in his answer about how it would be okay for women to go to back alley abortionists, which is one of the stupidest pro-choice tropes that you hear dragged out into discussions. He didn't know that it wasn't even true. He put sort of the worst caricature on pro-life messaging, and it was just an absolute sabotage. It would make more sense if you thought of the Trump candidacy as actually deliberately trying to sabotage the pro-life movement than anything else. I mean, I think he obviously understood he messed up because he quickly walked back what he said, and then he walked it back some more a few hours later. But it was just, it was pretty devastating to the pro-life cause.
All right, Mark, give us the big picture here. Where do we stand right now when it comes to the presidential race? How are things shaping up on both sides of the aisle with those who desire that office?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there's still a lot to sort of figure out. According to the latest poll in Wisconsin, Ted Cruz is up a huge 10 points over Donald Trump, and Trump has been steadily declining in that state for a month. Combined with that, Trump has had a couple of very bad weeks in terms of publicity, both with the Michelle Fields incident where his campaign manager assaulted a reporter and is now being charged with battery over it, this pro-life stuff has certainly hurt him negatively. It just seems like he's had nothing but a lot of bad news for a week, and I think that's showing up in national polls and other state polls. So what that means is that it's very unlikely, I think, that Trump at this point is going to get the 1,237 delegates he needs to win the Republican nomination outright. At the same time, Ted Cruz would have to win something like 80% or more of the remaining delegates in order for him to win the nomination outright. And John Kasich is still hanging on in this race, even though he mathematically has no chance of winning. So the possibility of a brokered convention is looking greater and greater by the minute, where Republicans are going to have to go to Cleveland and they're going to have to cast votes among delegates and do all sorts of other, you know, maneuverings to select the nominee. So that's Republican side, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. And then on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton seems, you know, almost assured to win the nomination. However, Sanders has done surprisingly well. He's only a few hundred delegates behind her, and the Democrats also have this incredibly, well, undemocratic process in their primary where they have these 400-some-odd super delegates who are really party insiders that get to vote for whoever they want to help them seize the nominee. A lot of Sanders supporters are complaining about that, and even though Hillary is pretty much, you know, all evidence points to the fact that she's going to be, you know, become the nominee, there's going to be a lot of tension, I would imagine, at the convention and other things over the superdelegates and other ways that the Democrats have gone about this particular race in selecting their nominee.
Well, that raises a lot of questions. I will get to them on the other side of the break. We're talking about the November elections on this Thursday afternoon, March the 31st. Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, is our guest, along with Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan, gathers to receive our Lord's gifts in word, baptism, and supper every Sunday morning at 9:15. Bible study at 11. Join us at 4219 Park Lane in Door, or visit us on the web, epiphanydoor.org. Christ-centered, cross-focused, historic, confessional, liturgical. Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan. epiphanydoor.org. 616-681-0791.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Messiah Lutheran, Seattle, Washington. Grace Lutheran, McPherson, Kansas. St. Paul's Lutheran, Bridgeport, Nebraska, Our Savior Lutheran, Raleigh, North Carolina, St. Paul Lutheran, Hancock, Maryland, Messiah Lutheran, Keller, Texas, St. John's Lutheran, Maple Grove, Minnesota, Grace Lutheran, Parker, Colorado, and Our Redeemer Lutheran, Harrington, Kansas. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the November elections with Mark and Molly Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and the Federalist. Molly, Mark raises some questions in my mind in his last answer before the break. Let's talk first about a brokered convention, and you have recently come out and just said the loyalty oaths that are being or attempted to being procured in the Republican Party with regard to who will support who if whoever is the nominee and things like that. They're just stupid, you say. Why do you say that?
Well, we first saw these loyalty oaths dragged out last summer when everybody was worried that Donald Trump would run third party. And the Republican Party tried to get everybody to sign an agreement that they would support whoever was the nominee. And I was actually surprised that Donald Trump agreed at that point, although he can agree to anything because I don't think people expect him to keep his position. And in fact, he did walk that back. He changed his mind on whether he would support the eventual nominee this week in a forum that CNN held. But I just think the idea of talking about it is silly because nobody cares if a given candidate will support the eventual nominee. I don't think it really matters that much. And the media and the Washington, D.C. establishment are just obsessed with finding out, you know, whether someone's going to be loyal or not. I just think it's a waste of time when we could be talking about actual policy positions or other things that are of much more import to the average voter. But if it goes to a brokered convention, and I agree with Mark that it's looking much more likely that it will, anything could happen at this point, obviously, but I think that's a good thing. I mean, that's what conventions are for, and it's for precisely a moment like this where you have one sector of the party, or at least people who are voting in that party's primaries, some of which are open, which means Democrats and independents can vote. They want Donald Trump. Another sector very strongly doesn't want Donald Trump. So there's not going to be a good decision heading into the convention conventions are precisely to figure that out, where people can fight it out, figure out who they want, and then get behind that eventual nominee. If there was ever a moment that needed that type of convention battle, it would be this moment.
Just to add on to what Molly said, I'm in total agreement with her in the abstract that the media's obsession with, you know, whether or not candidates will adhere to these loyalty oaths is not something I think regular people care about. But there is one interesting technical wrinkle to this, which is that the delegates that Donald Trump won in South Carolina, according to the rules they've written, and this is all very complicated stuff, are bound to Donald Trump based on Donald Trump's willingness to pledge to support the Republican Party candidate, whoever it is. So if Donald Trump publicly backs away from supporting the eventual Republican nominee, whoever that is, then all of a sudden the delegates that are supposed to stand for him at the convention could possibly be released and could vote for somebody else. So I would just point out
some people say that his public backtracking already puts those delegates in jeopardy. They might, and that's important because South Carolina is a winner-take-all state where a lot of people who didn't want to support Trump are signed on as his delegates, and they are bound. So if they can be released, that would make a brokered convention all the more exciting.
Okay, so answer this question for our listeners, because many of them are probably saying, look, the guy went in with a plurality, if not a majority, but maybe a couple hundred short of the sufficient number to get the automatic nomination, okay? But look, the people have spoken, and a brokered convention is, in this case, undemocratic. How would you respond to that, Molly?
That makes me so angry, actually. It's like saying the Seattle Seahawks should get the touchdown because they made it all the way but 10 yards short of the goal line. If you make it, you make it, and if you don't, you don't. And it already, there are so many advantages to whoever comes out on top in a given state already, that even if you only get 30% of the vote, you can get the state's entire delegation, or you just get advantaged every little way, each congressional district, each state. And if you couldn't get over the finish line, even with all that help, well, don't whine and don't bellyache. It's nobody has gotten a clear majority in a single. Well, actually, I mean, I guess they're Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz got majorities in a few of the states. Donald Trump has yet to get a majority in any state, although he'll do it in New York, I think. But this is not, nobody's a clear winner here. This is silly to whine about.
Well, there's a couple of other things here that I would add. One is that, you know, people who say that about Trump, and a lot of Trump supporters are saying that this would be needlessly divisive. You know, Trump's close to the, you know, majority of delegates he needs, just give it to him. Well, the reality is that the majority of Republican voters that have voted thus far in the primary have voted against Donald Trump. So saying that, you know, it would be divisive to the party to make him the nominee when he hasn't won it outright is completely fallacious.
But
I mean,
there's such a long history of brokered conventions. I mean,
right.
Abraham Lincoln went in not as the major delegate winner to his convention and came out as the nominee. And I think the Republicans tend to be pleased with him.
And so did Dwight Eisenhower, as a matter of fact. In fact, five of the last seven nominees to come out of broker conventions for Republicans were guys that did not have the plurality of delegates coming into it. So this is a very established, time-honored process. And the Republican people and the Trump people want to make it sound like, you know, this is somehow unprecedented or this is taking the nomination away from Trump. Then nothing could be further from the truth. This is the process. This is how it's worked. This is how it's always worked. This is how it's designed to work. So, you know, saying that, you know, the plurality of delegates really counts for, you know, something is just not true.
Well, there's another thing, too, which is that this is a party process. And I understand that Donald Trump and many of his supporters are new to the party, but that's no excuse for not getting to know the rules of the party. And there was a good example also in Louisiana where Donald Trump did edge out Ted Cruz narrowly in the general vote in the primary that they had down there, but he didn't understand the rules of how delegates are allocated. And Ted Cruz's people, who tend to be, you know, pretty hardcore Republican Party types, they did understand how the delegates are allocated. And so the Cruz team managed to get 10 more delegates than Donald Trump did out of Louisiana. We just talked about the Carolina issue where by publicly not supporting the candidate, all those delegates are at risk. Donald Trump should probably start learning the rules of the party whose nomination he seeks, particularly if he wants to complain about those procedures.
Okay. You spoke earlier, Mark, about, I think you called it the undemocratic process of superdelegates that the Democratic Party has. And some people are saying, look, the Republicans have got to do something. A guy with little to no ties to the Republican Party is very close to being their nominee. And, I mean, to use the word, it's obviously not a neutral word, but it's kind of the first one that pops to mind, has hijacked the party. Do they? Right. Did the Republicans need to do something along those lines that the Democrats have, giving the party a little more say there?
Well, that is a really good question, and I think that Republicans definitely, after this election cycle, will be taking a closer look at the party's rules and things to see if, you know, they can exert more control over the process if they need to in a situation like this. On the other hand, you know, with a situation where, you know, you just have party insiders, you know, who count for, you know, 400 some odd delegates in the primary, like the Democrats, I mean, that's a pretty extreme way to go, and it's very, well, you know, undemocratic, like I said. So, you know, I think you want to be careful that you don't go very far and you don't read too much into what happened with Trump. I mean, if you look at this election cycle, I mean, it really is almost a one in a million shot that Trump has been able to consistently cruise through this primary with, you know, winning, you know, all these states with a hard ceiling of, you know, never getting much more than the, you know, 35 or so percent of the popular vote. I mean, it's just been absolutely crazy that that's the situation. And he's gotten a tremendous amount of, you know, breaks and just general fortune has gone his way to make that happen. It's really hard to see those kinds of circumstances arising where, you know, a demagogue like him is allowed to float through, but everybody else in the race is attacking a normal establishment Republican like Marco Rubio. So I don't know.
Don't you think that they should not change the rule? I mean, there's some rules that, frankly, will be decided in the months leading up to the convention, but the general set of rules that have been in place, don't you think that those should stay the same, lest either Cruz voters or Trump voters or other voters feel that the process is unfair?
I mean, this is a really delicate balance. I mean, of course, whatever you want to do, that's what I said, you don't want to go over far to the Democratic side of things where you leave people feeling like it's a completely undemocratic process that's decided by, you know, party insiders. But at the same time, you know, you do want to make sure that you preserve the identity of the party and, you know, and you support the traditional Republican voters rather than have a situation here where, you know, clearly all the Republican voters in closed primaries where traditional Republican voters are voting tend to vote strongly against Donald Trump, and then you have these open primary states where all these people flood in from the Democratic side of things or independents who don't really care about the fortunes of the Republican Party and are, you know, voting for a guy that could well destroy the party. So it really is a delicate balance.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll have a little bit more with Mark and Molly Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and the Federalist, getting an update on the November elections. We'll talk a little bit about the influence of big business on the issue of religious liberty. Georgia Governor Nathan Deal vetoed a religious liberty bill and is reportedly, at least in part, because he was bowing to pressure from Disney. We'll be right back. How do we keep teenagers connected to the church after confirmation? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March is Teaching the Faith at Home. What does this mean? How is this done? It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Teaching the Faith at Home costs $15.99 plus shipping and handling. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Teaching the Faith at Home.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the November elections on this Thursday afternoon. Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard, and Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Mark, you had mentioned before, very briefly, Governor Kasich. What is he doing still in the race?
That is a really good question, and I think a lot of people are trying to figure that out right now. It is mathematically impossible for him to win the nomination outright. He won Ohio, obviously, which is a huge state with a lot of delegates, and depending on convention rules and how all that stuff goes down, I suppose it's possible that he could be a player in helping to determine who the eventual nominee is. I think Kasich at this point is hoping that that nominee will be him. There was a lot of scuttlebutt there for a long time that Kasich was possibly running to be Trump's VP, but today he came out and just lambasted Trump, saying that his position on abortion and some of the things that he'd said about the use of nuclear weapons are completely disqualifying for anybody. So it seems like it'd be really hard for him to walk that back and become Trump's VP. I really think that Kasich believes he's some sort of consensus candidate among the three remaining, whereas Ted Cruz is disliked by a lot of his colleagues in Washington and is seen as too severely conservative for certain establishment types, and Donald Trump is broadly unacceptable to a lot of Republicans and polls very poorly against Hillary Clinton, that he can be the guy that they all rally around. But I think that Kasich is dramatically overestimating his appeal with the larger Republican base, and if it comes down to that situation where they're rejecting the top two nominees for whatever reason, they're going to find some other person who's more broadly popular and try and convince, say, a Paul Ryan or type like that, that can be more of a consensus candidate from outside the race.
Molly, you wrote recently about a Republican governor there in Georgia who vetoed a religious liberty law. Tell us the story and answer the question, who is going to win in this battle that on many fronts seems to be between big business interests and social conservatives?
Well, this is another case of what's called Religious Freedom Restoration Act legislation. This is legislation that just a few years ago was broadly popular on left and right as a way to protect the religious views or to protect religious adherents when they face a threat from government action. This started out at the federal government, started by Chuck Schumer, no conservative, signed into law by Bill Clinton. There were some court rulings that made it apparent that they needed to be implemented at the state level as well. And so you have dozens of states that have implemented this legislation, since a lot of the ways that people's religious views are hurt happen at the state or local level. So Georgia is the latest state that had some Religious Freedom Restoration Act legislation. They also had on top of that some protections for clergy, which we're always told you don't even need because, of course, nobody would go after clergy. And the governor vetoed it. And he said he would have supported it if it was just about clergy, but he had problems with protecting the religious freedom of people who are not clergy. And he was someone who was subjected to a tremendously expensive and highly coordinated corporate campaign where all of the big companies in the country they're obviously working together against religious liberty. And since the media also oppose religious liberty, it's really hard to get the message out that this very first freedom mentioned in the First Amendment, this something that is absolutely foundational to our country, is important and that it's under threat by corporations, media groups, and a very coordinated attack on this freedom because it goes against a new freedom that people are advocating, which is broad, extensive sexual freedom. And when sexual freedom and religious liberty collide, Americans used to believe absolutely that religious freedom should dominate, and now they're saying that sexual liberty is more important than religious liberty.
Mark, with about a minute here, what's changed with big business? Why the hostility towards social conservatives and religious liberty?
I think that they just realize that if they unite together, they can broadly be the sort of enforcement arm of the Democratic Party. I mean, the people at the top of these businesses, they tend to be very liberal socially, and they have these ideas, and they realize that they can enforce these things with very little financial repercussions at this, you know, and they can really twist arms. I just wanted to add one thing, and one thing I'm sort of flabbergasted that this just hasn't been mentioned. You know, this religious liberty issue in Georgia is no joke. I mean, a year or two ago, Atlanta fired the fire chief, a guy named Kelvin Cochran, because he wrote a book in his own spare time. You know, it was like 160-page devotional about helping men avoid sexual temptation, and in the book he listed as a sexual sin homosexuality. And for that crime, he was literally fired from his job for having an opinion in his free time. And the Atlanta City Council member said about firing him, he said, "I respect each individual's right to have their own thoughts, beliefs, and opinions, but when you're a city employee and those thoughts, beliefs, and opinions are different from the city's, you have to check them at the door." That's the definition of religious liberty in Atlanta, right there. You're not even allowed to have religious opinions when you're not on the job. And the idea that they don't need protection for this in Georgia is a lie. And, you know, to pretend otherwise is just baffling.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, it's always a pleasure, and thank you very much.
Thanks again for having me.
Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can read their columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Well, it seems to be shaping up to be one of those things that maybe we've crossed a barrier here where, in the balance, when all other rights were weighed, religious liberty used to outweigh those others. Well, I don't think we can look forward to that being the future, especially for us Christians. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, on this last day of March, is a great resource for you to teach your children the faith at home. Find out more about the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Teaching the Faith at Home, at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., the roots of the Sacramentarian controversy, Dr. Ken Sherb, and Issues Etc., soundbite of the week.
On Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service, every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is. 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.